Why they make such a fuss of him? You see now, because you don't know mathematics. And so when you come out, you find a lot of faults with him. This was not he was talking nonsense and I didn't understand it, and he was having all his personal side. Now this is exactly what happens with the manifestation of God. And those who are near him, those who are near him, his relations and his family are very close to him. They are sitting like the front row. And they have no spiritual qualities. You can be sure of this. No spiritual qualities. The only sign of spiritual qualities is if they are servants, if they are servitude. Like Abdu'l-Bahá, who I told you would never enter into the room of Baha'u'lláh without prostrating himself at his feet and considering himself as utter nothingness. Now, if you're not like that, you don't know mathematics in that example. Now, he knew it. He had seen nothing but the greatness of Baha'u'llah. But these people who had nothing at all, no spiritual qualities, but full of ambition, they had no share of the spiritual powers which was within him. And this is why Baha'u'llah says how many of the people who have been in his presence, who hadn't seen him at all, and how many people who were never in his presence, and they had understood and recognized his greatness and glory. These people were sitting very close, and so all they saw was a human being. They saw him, he has to eat, he has to sleep. If he gets tired, if he doesn't sleep tonight, he gets sick, just like everybody else. And because they had not seen the great glory which was within him, therefore they were the first to rise up. You see now how it is when you are very close? They always say that when you are close to a lamp, there is a shadow near the lamp. You know these lamps which have a stand, if you look at it, there is a shadow there. The light goes around. You are close to it. When you are close to the manifestation of God, tests are very great. The slightest impurities, the slightest condition of ambition will destroy the soul. But we must thank God in this day that we have none of these problems, although we have to really deepen ourselves in the knowledge of the covenant. And I wish there was time that one could talk about the covenant. This in itself is something which will need a long time to discuss this. But now I feel that we have come to the end, whether good or bad. We have talked a great deal, and I know that some of you are going to go. How many are going tomorrow? Well, everybody is going. So never mind. No. Huh? Oh no, everybody is going away, I mean, tomorrow. They won't see us tomorrow. He's going away tomorrow. Oh, there's a few people. Well, I would like to say to those of you who are going that for me it has been a greatest privilege and a greatest joy to be with you, really. And I hope that I haven't made you tired of all these things. And as I said, if you want to forget everything, forget those points. Just a few of them you can remember. But always remember that Baha'u'llah has to be with us. This is the thing, and this is the whole, the essence of all that we have said in our service. And that he comes to us for our assistance, he helps us, he supports us. And all this love that we have for each other, you know, the joy and the love that is in our hearts, is not because of ourselves. Now don't mistake that. All this love which brings us together and makes us to become like one people is not because of us, that we are very important people, that we are very special people in that sense. All of this love and this joy and this unity is because of Baha'u'llah. It is his revelation. It is the forces that he has released in the world, and it is that which comes through our hearts and makes us to become one. Otherwise, if you divorce that from it, what had we in common? All of us. Very little. Nothing. And in spite of all our weaknesses, we were talking about the weaknesses of our assemblies. In spite of all the weaknesses of our assemblies, look at the way the faith is growing. Look at the way we are holding on together. If it wasn't for the cause of God and the power of Baha'u'llah, do you think we would be staying together for more than one day in a local assembly? You will disband it immediately and say, go home, we don't want to get into this thing. Oh no. But it is the cause of God, and it is the early stages. And the only thing which will help us to really become happy people and to become and to see that the cause goes forward is to love each other through Baha'u'llah. Love, this love, if this love is not there, then we have to fight the spiritual battle. If I cannot see everybody with the eye of love and unity, then I have to fight my spiritual battle. And as I said, we must look into each other's faces and see a trace of Baha'u'llah, and then it will all work. Well, that's right.
But besides, at one point, he says sometimes God's greater plan interferes with something, or sees, well, so as you see it, the ocean of the immersive self-awareness, so to say, coming to Allah, bigger ocean of above God, and then the previous, maybe the body, sort of calm.
Well, I suppose you can say these things. Yes. Well, the covenant of God with man is something all-encompassing. The covenant of Baha'u'llah is only for his followers. It's only addressed to the followers. And that the plan of God is something overall, which will include all human beings. And Shoghi Effendi says sometimes these two plans will run into each other. Well, friends, I want to say farewell to some of you who are going, and I hope that we will see and hear about you all wonderful things that happens in this country. And I cannot say to you how much I have been happy and delighted to meet with the friends. So, these questions, I'll leave them on this table until tomorrow. Oh, no, we are not supposed to put anything here. Okay, well, we'll take them. And so, thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, no, please. No, please sit down. Please. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Are we going?
Yeah, we'll be here.
Oh. Well, thank you, John. I feel that we could deal with some of these questions, and then as we go on, I'm sure a lot of subjects will open up that we can talk about. Yesterday and day before, as some of you may know, we dealt with a comprehensive sort of survey of the life of a Baha'i, and the theme was, what should we do, how can we live to enable our faith to grow? And I think we still can talk about that. Naturally, you can talk around it and about this, but I think this morning I will pick up this question here. Is the person who has written this here? You have. It says, please tell the story. Oh, story about circumambulation. I thought you meant the wisdom of it, or this, or the yes. Well, first of all, I think I will mention this circumambulating. As you know, in the faith, this is a way of showing one's love and devotion to one that you worship as your God, as your Lord. You circumambulate around him. And this is actually a law, this is a principle of nature. Again, in nature you can find the parallel for this. You will find always an object which depends upon its creator. It revolves around it. You know, for instance, the earth revolves around the sun. it's in love with it. This is a love relationship. And the satellite revolves around the Earth. It is the force of love, really, as we know. I mean, from point of view of physics, we know what holds the satellite in motion. It is that force of attraction, which is the love and the speed of its action that make it circumambulate its beloved. And so it is a law of nature that if you depend on someone as your creator, you circumambulate around it. And this is why when you go to the shrines, the act of circumambulating the shrine is an act of devotion to your Lord. In the writings we come across this statement many a times, that the lovers circumambulate around their beloved. Now, the story of circumambulation, which is a story I mentioned to our friend in here, and he has recorded it in his tape, I think I am always reluctant to talk about these accounts unless it is in writing. I feel we must be very accurate and correct in quoting these things, because when the disciples of Baha'u'llah have recorded such incidents or such accounts, they have recorded it to the best of their ability and knowledge. And all we can do is to translate it and convey it. To try to put our own words to it, it sort of snowballs a little bit. I mentioned yesterday that we must not try to verbally communicate these stories. And this particular story that you have asked me to say, and I don't know how you come to know about it, probably Red must have told you this. He's hiding away there. This is already recorded in the videotape. Well, I will tell you the story, but don't go and tell everybody about this. Really, just keep it for yourself. Because I say this to you. First of all, such stories which relate to us the greatness of the cause, and such stories which relate to us things like miracles, things which sounds and looks like miracles, these things we are not supposed to consider them as miracles, because Baha'u'llah says, do not attribute any miracles to him. He says this will degrade the station of the manifestation of God. These accounts are only good for people who have seen them. And often people who had seen some of these accounts, I remember when I was a young boy, and they wouldn't tell us. They were very reluctant to talk about it because they didn't want to make it a point by which people would say, oh yes, this is the proof of the truth of this faith. You know, we never bring miracles as the proof of the truth of this faith. And as I said, Baha'u'llah says no one should attribute miracles to him. Although Abdu'l-Bahá has said that you can talk about it because it will give people joy and excitement, and it will uplift the souls to think about it. But we are not attributing miracles here. As I said, Baha'u'llah says it will degrade the station of the manifestation of God. Now, they were reluctant. Those people who were the origin of all these stories, they were reluctant to say it because... and especially when there were people who were not Baha'is, they would never say it to them. They would wait till people really become deep in the faith, who could sort of take it and put it in the right perspective. Now I will tell you the story of Baha'u'llah. You know that when Baha'u'llah was in the house of Abud, that's the That's the time that he, as you know, he spent about 7 years in those two houses, which is now called the House of Abud. And he had never seen a blade of grass, really, something green, trees, which he was so fond of. He really kept, as I said yesterday, the manifestation of God submits himself entirely to what his enemies do to him. He never uses his powers to stop them persecuting him. And so Baha'u'llah submitted to his enemies, and he did not leave that house. Although the several governors who had come, they were so friendly, some of them became so much the admirers of Abdul Baha, and in one or two cases they even met Baha'u'llah in the House of Abud, that they became so much carried away with his powers, and they saw his glory, that they openly said that, of course, Baha'u'llah could leave the town if he wanted it, and Abdul Baha could leave the town if he wanted it. But you see, they were incarcerated in that city according to the edict of the Sultan. Now, Baha'u'llah had mentioned to Abdul Baha on one occasion that it is 9 years, he said, that he had not seen any sceneries of green and trees and flowers. And Abdul Baha immediately realized that his will now is that he should leave this place. And as you all may have heard, I'm sure, he went out and he rented this gardens outside Baghdad, outside Akka, known as the Mansion of Mazra'a nowadays. The Mansion of Mazra'a, as you see it now, those of you who have seen it, has been developed further since those days of Baha'u'llah. In those days were much smaller and much more primitive than what it is today, but certain basic part of the house is still there. The room of Baha'u'llah is still there, and all those things. Things have been added to it. There's not much change in it, except things have been added to it. Rooms have been added to it. So, Abdul Baha rented this for a very reasonable price. And then he arranged the making of a special carriage. In those days, there were no such things as carriages around. And then he came to Baha'u'llah and he said, the carriage is ready, the gardens, the house outside is ready, and that he said, please, you can come out and let's go. Baha'u'llah said to him, no. He said, no, he was a prisoner and he was staying there. Now, here is a point that you must remember. I mentioned yesterday, the relationship that Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha had was not the same relationship as an ordinary son and the father. You know how it is, how informal is the relationship of the son and the father? That Abdul Baha could sort of insist and persist and say, oh, please come on, let's go, and this sort of thing. It wasn't like this. Baha'u'llah was his Lord. He had recognized him so much that none of us can ever recognize Baha'u'llah to that extent. And he showed such humility and such submissiveness to Baha'u'llah that no person can ever do. And in fact, it was Abdul Baha who taught the believers. You know, whenever believers came to the Holy Land, to attain the presence of Baha'u'llah, Abdul Baha would prepare them for coming in contact with Baha'u'llah. He would even look at their clothes and see whether their clothes were good enough. And if it wasn't, which in many cases were not, he would give them a new coat, new clothes to wear, so that when they go into the presence of Baha'u'llah, they are very well, you know, they look their best. And so, you know, and he taught them the lessons in humility and self-effacement and reverence. He taught them, prepared them for this.